If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this awesome episode of the Mind Pump.
It's awesome.
Look, for 38 minutes, we don't talk that much about fitness, but we do have a lot of fun. That's the intro to this show. So here's what we talked about in that intro. We started by talking about macadamia nut milk. It's delicious. And Adam has been using that in his smoothie box.
Smoothies.
Now remember, smoothie box delivers fresh, frozen, organic cut fruits and vegetables that you can make into smoothies. They are delicious. If you go to smoothiebox.com/mindpump, smoothie box is spelled SMOOTHIEBOX.com, you'll get $20 off your first three boxes. Then we talked about cordyceps to increase stamina. Now, cordyceps are a mushroom, and of course, our favorite makers of supplemental mushrooms are Four Sigmatic. They have a patented dual extraction process to give you all of those beneficial components. They are also one of our sponsors. If you go to Four Sigmatic, FourSigmatic.com/mindpump and use the code mindpump at checkout, you will get a massive discount.
They do mushrooms right, Sal.
Then we talked about the new Samsung phone that folds. What are they calling it? The origami phone?
Yeah, no. Samsung X, I believe.
Oh, okay. Phone? Yeah. I like my name better.
Fold phone.
That's it. Then we talked about texting and walking laws and how we are now in the age of abstinence. Justin brought up a cool study on push-ups. And then we talked about how North Carolina lawmakers are trying to change the grading scale. So all of you kids out there who currently have a C, you might be having a B now.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Congratulations.
And finally, we talked about intuitive eating. That was a topic we brought up a long time ago. Apparently, it's now the new fad. Pretty cool. We called it. Then we get into the fitness portion of this episode. The first question was how to fix persistent lower back pain that comes from deadlifting. Is it the deadlifts that's causing the problem, or is it lack of mobility and connection? We give you the answers, and we give you the answers on what to do. Mm-hmm. The next question, what about time limits in the gym? This person keeps hearing that you should only work out for about 30 to 40 minutes because after that it becomes detrimental. Is that right or is that wrong? Find out in that part of the episode. And the next question, how do we pass the awkwardness during the rest times when we're training clients that are quiet? So, you know, if you're a personal trainer and you're listening right now and you find that the 2-minute rest in between heavy sets of squats is awkward because nobody's talking.
You're hearing crickets.
We give you some tips. And the final fitness question, how do you decrease the negative effects of increased self-awareness? So when you go through the process of becoming more aware of what's healthy for you, many times it can bring anxiety and stress because, you know, ignorance is bliss. So we talk about some tips on how to get through that whole stage and get to the point where you become aware and blissful. Also, final hours. So if you're listening to this episode when it drops, MAPS Performance is 50% off, and it won't be 50% off for long at all. You literally have this until midnight of the day this episode drops. So here's what you do. Go to mapsfitnessproducts.com. Enter the code GREEN50, GREEN50, to get that 50% off MAPS Performance. We have other MAPS programs on that site as well. Make sure you go check them out.
I got to give Doug some props here.
Oh, more props?
Oh, yeah. Is he sharing, give it all to Doug.
Is he sharing any anti-aging secrets with you?
No.
Some serum.
I am trying your saw palmetto, though.
On your hair?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, use the whole. You got to use it for a while before you notice anything. Yeah.
You have weird dreams about Doug. And
thank you, wifey.
Any close encounters?
That's why you had that dream the other day.
I knew
it's a saw palmetto.
I knew it.
I sprinkled a little.
Yeah.
Little
listen,
estrogen.
Listen, Linda. Listen. It's got to give Doug his props on the macadamia nut call with the smoothie box.
How amazing is it?
Zing!
Yeah, he wins. That was a good call. That was a good call, and it's worth the extra $1.37 I have
to
pay.
I'm still late to the party. I'm next.
It's the mouthfeel, right?
I don't know if it's that. I think it actually has like a, I don't know if it's a sweeter taste to it or what, but the texture is a little bit different, but it just tastes better. Tastes better than the almond milk. Maybe because I do like the really bland almond milk, and it has no flavor to it.
It's like an immediate upgrade.
Yeah, it's like water. There's more flavor, I think, to the macadamia nut, and maybe just complements smoothie box really well. So I am a fan.
When do you do it? In the morning?
No, just whenever. I don't have a schedule on when I take smoothies, dude. It's kind of like if there's a day going by where I've used it for different reasons, right? So the green one, I tend to use if I think it's a day where I'm lacking in greens, like that, I'll navigate towards there. The cacao I typically use when I have like a sweet tooth at night, like when I'm watching movies or I smoke weed and I want ice cream, and instead of that, I have that. And then the clementine's like a daytime one. So that's like a, if I feel like a smoothie or a shake and I want something in the middle of the day, and that's that one's like my favorite tasting one by itself.
Have a decent amount of vegetables in them, which was what was shocking to me.
Right, right.
Because when you open the bag, when I first got it, I opened the bag and it's chunks of food and vegetables just chopped up and frozen.
Yeah, and the cacao especially. I was like, wow, I didn't realize they like snuck in all these vegetables in this, you know, in this blend.
That's why you got to blend it good. Yeah. So you don't blend it good, then you get little bits of
glad you brought that up, because I actually have had several DMs since I've talked about how Katrina's using it a lot. So personally, me, it's either 1 to 1.5 cups of macadamia or almond milk. No ice, because if you keep it in the freezer, then all the food and vegetables that are in there is enough like to make it cold and slushy-like. Mm-hmm. And if you added ice to that, it would just bog down your blender because it's already really thick. Even at 1.5 cups, it's still a pretty thick shake. So it's very satisfying. So if somebody is thinking it's a shake you pound, it's not like that at all. It's definitely a thick, fulfilling shake, which that's why I've used the cacao more than anything else, because I'm the ice cream guy. It's been a nice replacement to that, because it's got a great flavor.
Have you tried
slow sipper?
Have you tried adding even more protein to it? So it comes with collagen, which is 20 grams.
I haven't done that yet.
That's what I would do.
You mentioned that last time.
Mm-hmm. Add a scoop of, you know, another scoop of protein powder in there to you know, bump up the protein even higher.
Oh, yeah.
And it just makes it even more thick.
I thought about putting some eggs in it. It'd be great.
Oh, that's what I do, dude.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got to be careful, though, because I always have to give...
creamy texture, too.
Well, just the yolks, you know. Egg yolks give you... It's a really, really good source of cholesterol. You don't cook the cholesterol, so it's not oxidized, so it's a little better for you. Gives you that strength boost. This is what I do post-workout.
You just might die of salmonella, that's all.
Hey, well, man. Hold on a second.
A little risk.
I'm glad you said that. I always want to tell people that. There's always a risk of foodborne illness, salmonella, when you eat raw eggs. So I'm not recommending people do that. That's all on you. That's what I do. Now, that being said, if you do your research like I did, eggs, I think 1 out of 20,000 is the risk of having salmonella. So
the thriller from salmonella.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, I put the sal in salmonella.
Is that a different offer besides our offer that you just pulled up, Doug?
No, it's a recipes. They have a section on their website called The Blender. And what they have is a bunch of different recipes. Candy cane smoothie, eggnog smoothie. They have like chocolate covered strawberry bowl. That sounds kind of tasty right there.
Damn.
Oh, I'll start messing with some of the recipes. Though.
Yeah, kid friendly smoothie. This looks interesting.
Kid friendly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're all kid friendly.
No alcohol.
Virgin.
Did I ever tell you guys about that? What? I worked at Red Robin.
Is that wrong commercial?
Threw me off. Yeah, I think that was wrong. Is that right?
I think it confused two commercials there.
Yeah, I'm like, that just like shorted my brain for a second.
Yeah, what is that, what you just did?
Yeah,
that's something else.
It's not Red Robin?
No.
Yum.
Yes.
No, I think you're right.
No, it wasn't Red Robin. What I just did was something else.
Yeah.
Red Robin,
that's
going
to piss me off. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. Green Giant?
No.
Green Giant.
No, I think you're right, dude. I'm going to be honest.
Red Robin.
Yeah, I think you're right. Anyways, stupid job. I did not want to have this job, right? But it was like brand new in the area, and I'm like, I got to get something off campus, you know, that I could get some extra cash. And so I started there before I went to this nice restaurant and started working. And they had these things called like the rookie magic and the cookie magic, some version of it, but one had alcohol in it, one didn't, and it was like a cookies and cream milkshake.
So it's the same drink, one alcohol, one no alcohol.
Yeah, and so the only difference is like you pour it as a bartender, you pour it into like a little kid's cup, because like the little kids would get that, and then you'd have the big size with like all the fancy garnishing and stuff. So one of the asshole bartenders, like, whoops, you know, grabbed from the wrong blender, and one of the kids
got
super smashed. And,
are you kidding?
And puked and everything. Yeah, yeah.
Did the kids? Oh, the kid got sick.
Got sick.
Oh, so they didn't like
that was
fun.
A big, yeah, that was yeah, exactly.
It wasn't
yeah,
like wow, Tommy is well behaved
yeah,
today.
Yeah, all of a sudden he's like hitting on all the little girls. You know? Yeah. Just going crazy. Like, yeah. What's Tommy doing?
Yeah, little Tommy's. Right? He's hitting on the ugly girls.
He's real friendly right now.
He normally doesn't talk to the ugly girls. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. He's making weird buildings.
That's dangerous.
Anyway, yeah,
that's dangerous. My
that was terrible.
When my brother was little. I don't know why this kind of reminds me of. So when he was little, he was a climber, and he climbed up to the cabinets and got TriMedic, which is like cough medicine or something. I don't know. Drank the whole bottle, and was fine. Was absolutely fine, but drank the whole bottle, freaked everybody out.
TriMedic,
I think it was called TriMedic.
The cough syrup.
Yeah,
dude, I did that.
What?
Yeah, it was my brother's.
It's like a challenge or something?
No. My brother was playing doctor with his friend with me and like.
Whoa.
It's not that kind of party, bro. Yeah,
I know what's on your brain, Adam. I know what seeps in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nothing like that, dude. I was like, because I liked the flavor of this orange cough syrup, and so they just kept feeding it to me. I ended up having to go to the hospital and then taking all this like activated charcoal, like a concentrated dose. And the acting nurse there was my brother's friend's mom. So she was just mortified.
Wow.
Yeah.
So any permanent damage that we know of?
Probably.
Obviously.
I mean, definitely in the guts. You know, that's probably where it gave me the iron stomach.
Justin would have been like a brilliant neuroscientist, you know? But that one thing.
Who said I couldn't have you? I just applied myself.
Yeah. 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 Anyways.
Come on. People believe it.
Dude, I wanted to tell you, Adam, before you do your swim, because you're working on stamina, which you haven't trained for a long time.
Right.
Right? Start taking the 4-sigmatic cordyceps, because that is where it shines.
Since we have started this podcast, you have been pushing the shrooms on me like crazy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Since
will
the
you
beginning.
Listen?
Yeah. Will
you
legal
finally
ones.
Listen?
Yeah.
No. Listen, cordyceps. If that's the one place it shines, is for stamina. And there's studies to support.
Now,
how
is
it,
that in the? Is that in that cool little the new orange shot thing? Because I like that you've been giving us.
Oh, we did all have that. I enjoyed
that. Oh shit!
That as
do
well.
They? Is that? Do they? Have they released that? Am I allowed to talk about that?
I don't know if they released it. They
Doug
might
could,
have.
Doug, could you
we get little sneak peeks on products. It's fine.
I forgot that might be something that's
it's
not out.
It's right here. Let me look at it right now. It's the mushroom focus shot with lion's mane.
Could you look that up, Doug? Because I might have been fucked up there. Sorry, for sigmatic if I talked about a product.
Yeah, that one's really good too.
No, so this is the pineapple, definitely. So this doesn't have it in it?
No, that's got lion's mane, rhodiola, and caffeine. Also good for stamina. But cordyceps is, look, check this out. They did one study where they had 30 healthy adults using a stationary bike. People who received the cordyceps had an increase, a VO2 max increase by 7%. And the other group had no increase.
Wow.
So just to show you a difference. It increases lactate threshold. It is on the site.
Okay,
there you
cool.
go. So you get the focus shot too.
Yeah, you guys should try them. They're
do,
awesome.
Do the freaking cordyceps, dude. Pre-workout.
I'll try it.
It also regulates testosterone in the testes. So
I like that.
You know, so you might get a little more testosterone.
You're always concerned about my balls, dude.
Let's raise them up.
Ever since Deion Sanders had his hands on him.
Oh, dude, he didn't touch
him. Trying to bring it back. You didn't tell us the whole dream.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You cut it short. All the
you know, you
left out all the juicy details.
Yeah. Hey, so yesterday I got to apply my first, you know, new found skill in swimming, right? Like as far as technique. I mean, that's what I should say.
What was your new skill?
So technique. I think I mentioned it on the podcast, but I hadn't gone and actually applied it yet, which was I kicked the shit out of my legs when I swim.
Oh, you're not supposed to.
Yeah. And it made a fucking huge difference.
So what do you do? Just leave it like dead leg?
Yes. You
just
get
like a slight like
very
movement.
And the legs are only to help you rotate your hips so you can get rotation in your upper body.
So more like a rudder than anything.
Yeah, because what
so
you,
now hold on. Let me help. Okay, so are you leaving your legs?
This blew my mind.
Are you leaving your legs blah, like you're paralyzed?
So they
or
actually,
are they doing something?
So they actually recommend to teach somebody this that you pinch a kickboard between your legs to keep them completely locked and fixed. To teach you to have that habit of, because it's just natural that we want to kick our legs.
Right.
Like you want to kick, it's just a natural instinct to do that. But what ends up happening is that your hips start to sag a little bit and you cause more drag than you actually help propel you forward. And so actually almost being there like dead leg and just totally going limp in your legs and letting yourself float to the top, and then you're just using all upper body. Bro, I was so much faster.
It almost...
I was like, oh shit, that's so weird without kicking in.
It kind of makes sense though with the way that... You know how you would row with a canoe, and then, I mean, the whole thing is just gliding. You're dragging the boat, basically, if you could just float like
that. It's almost like that, Justin, except the boat isn't legs and doesn't have... Can't
you got arms, dude. Your arms are the paddles, asshole.
No, but it doesn't make...
It's a good analogy. Yeah. It is.
It's better than ramp water.
Trying to fucking... I was with my analogy.
I was with you on that one, Justin. Yeah. I was...
No, but I'm going to start defending myself now.
Dude, this...
Yeah, that's my new thing.
No, it's my new thing. It's crazy because it makes no sense. It's like, imagine doing anything and they're like, hey, listen,
yeah,
use half your body, it'll be better. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, okay, you know when you lift that weight?
Yeah.
Don't use your legs.
Sense. No, it doesn't make sense.
No, this is why it literally blew my mind what a difference. And anybody who's kind of trying to learn or get into it right now, it doesn't mean you force your legs not to move, because you allow them to kind of, when you rotate left to right when you're swimming, you allow the hips to naturally rotate. And so it does cause a little, but you're not trying to kick at all. So I'm relaxing my legs completely.
Are you timing yourself to see?
Not officially yet, although there's a clock that I kind of...
So you can feel you're faster.
Oh, yeah. You can tell by how many strokes it takes to get across the water. And it was I didn't count them, but it was significant enough to me go, whoa, I didn't have to even move that many times to get across the other side.
That's weird.
Oh, it blew my mind, bro. It blew my mind. It was something that such a subtle thing that I learned, applied, and instantly made a huge difference. I mean, now I was able to...
Maybe that's my problem.
So, it made a big difference. It made a big difference.
I got a lot of drag back there. That might be the problem.
You got to tuck those three legs together.
You know how I tend to swim? Doggy paddle.
Of course. I believe that.
I do believe that.
I hate it.
Guys.
I hate it. I used to be a great... I don't know what happened as I got older. I just started... I don't drown. I'm just not very effective. You know what I mean? I'm just not efficient. When I went to Hawaii with Jessica, we went snorkeling. And I got fucking exhausted. I'm like, give me the life vest. So I was the guy with the life vest that was snorkeling around everywhere. It was terrible. Wow.
So embarrassing.
Yeah. A grown man. You know what I mean?
I mean, I thrash a lot. You know,
it's like a 4-foot pool. You need
misuse my energy.
Yeah, I could. She's like, just stand. The water's right there.
Just stand.
I can't see the bottom.
It's supposed to be flow.
When I do that. Yeah, anyway.
It's sexy too.
Justin, you were talking about the new Samsung phone that's out.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? Yeah, I have seen it. It looks sick.
The foldable one. So now, that, I mean.
What do you mean
this
foldable?
This is interesting. So imagine now your phone like being on a hinge. And so the hinge of it, where the screen is, will actually fold
open
together. And so it looks like a tablet. So now, like your phone, I mean, and they have it so it's you can hold it within your hand, just like, you know, your iPhone X or whatever size. But now the back of it is basically flush, so you fold it open, and now I have a full fledged tablet. And there's all these like interesting functions that they've, they've added to
it. So is the screen itself is continual and flexible.
Continuous, yes.
It's not like there's a seam in it.
That's what blows my mind, that they were able to figure that out, because I think that, I mean, that was proposed a long time ago that they were trying to work on stuff like that. But look at Apple, dude. Where are you? Like, I feel like maybe they wait on to see if it's going to prove itself in the market.
Apple. So you saw the new Apple phone. I love their campaign, by the way. Have you guys seen their Apple's new campaign for the new phone? The bokeh? You bokeh? You would bokeh a child? Who bokehs a child?
What?
You guys haven't seen this?
No.
Oh, what a great commercial. Great advertising. This is a fuck you gotta have.
Yeah, they do have good
commercials. Oh, dude, so good. I mean, there's three ladies, and they're all sitting kind of like having coffee or tea together and stuff like that, and they're all friends, and one of them is looking at the pictures from like the kid's birthday party or some shit. And she's like, oh, look at Sammy. Or like they'd show her friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's zoomed in. So it's one of those cool photos where you're zoomed in and the background's all blurred out, which they call that bokeh. Mm-hmm. So that's you have the ability to take a shot and then actually do that. You can slide over and create.
After you've taken the
after
shot?
After that. And so it's her son that's blurred out in the back. And so she's like, you bokeh'd my son?
You
bokeh'd me?
Yeah, it's right here. You gotta watch this. So.
Oh, no.
Wait. Who is that blurred out there in the background? Did you bokeh my child?
Just totally unintentional.
Why do you hate Jacob?
What? No, look, I can unbokeh, see? Bokeh, unbokeh.
Wow.
What kind of person bokehs a child? I would never bokeh your child.
I would never bokeh your child.
Right? Isn't that epic, dude?
That's very smart.
Very smart, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
But you think they're going to be able to compete, continue to dominate the way they have?
100%. I think
Samsung seems like they're going to.
The book, The Four, gets into this, and I love this about the, what they talk about Apple. We all look at Apple as a tech company because it's computers, phones, things like that. But they refer to them in the book as a luxury brand. They have now reached this, which is what makes them so successful, is it's become, you know, the thing. You have the new iPhone XS that doesn't even matter if you had the one before or whatever.
Well, and it's a lot of those type of details, right? So they really spend a lot of time in the user interaction and the experience that you're getting on the phone versus, like, you know, always coming up with a brand new idea for the phone. But I mean, as a consumer too, you see something like that foldable phone, and you're like, oh my God, like, that is badass.
Well,
like,
the next,
it's a badass idea.
Whoever takes the next big step, which will be probably, you know, changing the interface in the sense where you can connect more directly, they're going to dominate. I don't give a fuck how awesome Apple is. If a company comes out with a way to a different way to get information from your phone that's just faster and easier, they're going to dominate. I tagged you guys on Instagram. There was this awesome short video of the most powerful brands of the world over the last 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys watch that?
How it all fluctuated over, like, it was like 2007 till now.
It was
now.
Like Coca-Cola was number one and McDonald's and whatever. But then very quickly, Google out of nowhere just whoop, I remember Apple, and down, you know.
Yep.
And you can see how
Amazon's
fast.
Amazon's at the very bottom, and then all of a sudden they just
you see how fast companies trade places, and we forget about that. And we tend to think, when a company's number one, like, nobody's going to touch them. They're the biggest, they're the best. Mm-hmm. But man, that's not how markets work. Markets, like, you see this fluctuate like crazy, you know? Not just like Coca-Cola didn't go away.
No.
They're still massive, but are they anywhere near as big and powerful?
Well,
is that Google?
Companies like that, when the market moves, for example, when, you know, juice all of a sudden becomes popular, or then sugar-free drinks become popular, companies like Coke go acquire the best front runners in that. We're seeing that example with Primal Foods right now. Who was it? Heinz, right?
Yeah.
When you become a massive company like that, what's beautiful is you don't need to, just like Apple, and that's my argument would be with you on your statement is, yeah, bullshit. Apple will still win, because what will happen, they have enough of a stronghold on the brand that enough people are in love with them like that, that so what? Google or the next company beats them to that? It's not enough for everyone to leave that, because Apple will just respond with that same technology.
So I think it's rare to see a company get that dominant and then fail. That's probably not going to happen. I think they'll always, for a long time, they're going to last for a long time and be very successful. But the drawback with getting that big is that you lose the nimbleness and the ability to experiment and be quick with change that small companies do.
That's because you don't need to. That's because a small company who's trying to prove the model or prove that they have a great idea, they can allow them to be a zero company and go all the way to be a $100 million company, because they're a multi-billion dollar company, and they'll just acquire their ass. Or they'll steal their technology, they'll reverse engineer it and do it themselves.
That's what it seems like, but it's never, I mean, it's crazy, because like I said, if you go through the last five decades, the companies have shifted so much, it's been pretty wild. So although it seems super dominant, and who knows, the age of tech is changing a lot of different things, so who knows if it'll change that too, because like you said, like Facebook, for example, bought Instagram
obviously with the Amazon and Apple having like trillions of dollars in cash, I'm sure it's shifted, but like, you know, like the oil and energy companies, they've actually started to, like, you know, dominate over like the amount of money that they have in comparison.
Yeah.
So that's crazy, because that used to be the standard forever. It was like the oil barons,
right,
owned
Exxon,
everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the people that made the railroads, you know, or American car auto manufacturers were dominant. They were the ones that sold all the cars. And then they got their asses kicked.
You know,
for a long time.
Speaking of all this tech and phone conversation, did you guys know that there's already laws in the U.S. about texting and walking? It's going to get fined.
Really?
No.
Yes.
Yeah. Are they going to police this?
Honolulu already, it's already a law that if you cross the street while texting, you can get fined, I think it's 100 or 500, somewhere around there.
Well, that makes sense.
Crossing the street and texting is...
That makes more sense than jaywalking.
Yeah. If you put other people in danger, I get that. I hate laws that protect you from yourself, though. I think that's stupid.
Mm.
You know, like, if you don't wear your own seatbelt, like... I'm hurting me if something happens. So that's just they create those laws to have an excuse to pull you over,
right,
or
right.
To fuck with you. So you don't got your you're not protecting.
That's
yourself.
What I
got to throw you.
I wanted to bring it up because I don't know if you guys remember about a year ago or so when I brought up the article of over in China they have actually lanes,
texting lanes.
Yeah, so on the sidewalk they've painted lanes just like on the freeway where it's like if you're just walking, if you're on your phone or you're texting, you have to be in another lane.
Dude,
or you get fined.
We are entering into a completely new. I was having this conversation earlier. I was talking to a potential guest for our show. I don't want to go too much into that because I want to save that for when we interview him. But I firmly believe, and I brought this up recently in one of my Instagram posts, that I think we are entering into the age of abstinence. I think, you know, for a long time, for most of human history, what brought you a better quality of life was learning how to acquire things. Humans working together, making things more efficient, acquiring more knowledge, acquiring more food, acquiring more shelter, more resources, acquiring more friends. But I think this new age, because we have so much, that the key to quality of life is going to be learning how to abstain. And it's, you know, in this conversation I was having earlier, we were talking about technology, and it reminded me of how, you know, there's a whole movement of kids, like young guys, who are abstaining from masturbation and porn completely. That would have never happened ever any other time in history. Nobody would ever said, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. But the reason why they're doing it now is because they have such easily accessible pornography.
It's everywhere.
And this is their own doing. Nobody's telling them to do this. It's not like there was a law that came out saying, hey, you guys need to stop doing this. The guys themselves started saying, I need to stop doing this because I'm noticing detrimental effects. So I'm not going to watch porn anymore. And we see that with food, obviously, learning how to abstain from food, whereas before you didn't have food, so getting it was important. Now it's about who can abstain from it. Abstaining from electronics and technology is going to be the next one. That's going to be the big one. And you're already starting to see people now talk about this, where they need to figure out ways of abstaining or controlling their use of technology because it's decreasing their quality of life.
Access is the problem now.
It's
interesting.
It's you're given everything, and so now the wise people are the ones that know how to titrate, abstain, and basically that's a skill in and of itself. It was never a skill before. It was never a skill. Relatively recently, did it become a skill to learn how to abstain from indulging in food? That was never something that you had to learn before. It was like, why do you got to learn that? We don't have food. Just fucking eat it when you have it.
Right.
Now, if you learn the skill of abstinence with food, you are the one that's healthy. And everybody else is the one that's not healthy. And so I think that's going to be the next big thing is humans learning and people learning.
You know what was cool? I ran across a study recently about... and it's kind of goes not necessarily in line with resistance training, but I think it's along, you know, that kind of a pathway. And it was talking about basically push-ups that help you live long. Push-ups help you live longer. It was proving that doing more push-ups will actually help to elongate your life. So
is this a study that showed like...
It sounds like clickbait.
Yeah, it does. But yeah, with the study was... I'll just read the study and how it was like set up. It showed that the... basically the people that signed up did 40 straight push-ups, had a 96% less likelihood of having a cardiac event over a 10-year period.
Oh yeah. So your strength is a great indicator of your potential for not having a life-threatening event, you know? So if you can do a lot of push-ups, the odds that you'll live longer is much higher than someone who can't.
Yeah. No, that's pretty obvious. If you're a stronger individual, like you're gonna be able to resist a lot of, you know, a lot of these like diseases and all these types
I'm telling
of
you dude we do all these tests we do all these blood tests. We check blood pressure and cholesterol levels and triglycerides, and we do all this other stuff. We're gonna find that one of the cheapest and yet most accurate ways of predicting somebody's health or mortality is going to be strength.
Yeah.
And you're going to see that.
Well, I love that. I love that we're going in that direction because it's always been VO2 max or like the cardio threshold. Like that was like the standard, you know, is like how much your heart can take versus like, you know, how strong you are.
Yeah, because there was another study with grip strength.
Uh-huh.
Where there was grip strength, and then there was another one.
Yeah,
where people, their ability to get up off the floor without using their without having to hold on to something.
That to me seems like one of the most important skills that we all should keep practicing. And you know what's crazy? I've had clients before who I've told to do that, and then think, oh, they think they're going to be able to do it right away, and then then at that moment is when they realize, holy shit, I can't
Wait a minute. I've never done it this way.
I can't get off the floor without my hands. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's such an eye-opening moment for a lot of people that don't realize like how much you're losing mobility that you are at X age and you can't even get up off the floor without your hands.
Well, you know? Dude, I mean, you were talking about how sore your arm got from throwing.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking like, when's the last time I was throwing something for a while? Or when's the last time I
ever?
When's the last time I ran and changed directions while I was running?
Darts.
I haven't done that in a long time. You know what I mean? Where I'm running and trying to change directions. Think about that. When's the last time you did that on a consistent basis, right? Yeah. You know?
And you lose that ability.
Yeah, and I'm like, I thought to myself, like, I don't feel confident doing that right now. That's not good. So I think I'm going
to
start
doing some
stuff outside.
I have to say that I can feel the way I'm walking and moving already differently just from the swimming.
Mm.
Just because it's waking up areas on especially on my backside that I think I just haven't done before, you know? I can feel it all in my, like, trunk control. Like my hips and my core area feel
so much core.
Yeah, and I just feel more stable. I do feel better. And it's like what I'm only a week and a half or whatever like that into this.
Can't imagine what's going to be like in 6 months.
Yeah, no, I'm really curious, and I'm watching the progression is really fast. It's because it's a combination of I'm learning the skill better, and in addition to that, I'm also building my endurance a little bit. So it's really I'm already having a blast. I'm excited to go the next day because I'm seeing progression every single time right now because it's such a new skill for mm-hmm. me. So it's really neat to go like, oh, I watch all these YouTube videos and stuff, and then I go apply it, and it's like, oh, shit. And I'm getting – and on top of that, every time I do it, I'm stretching myself a little further, so I'm building my gas tank a little bit. So it's every time's more enjoyable than the last time, which is really cool. Although I have to say something about that while I'm talking about this. I've had a ton of DMs about the JBLs, the waterproof headphones. I'm really frustrated with them. I think they fit amazing. They sound great. They're comfortable. I actually love everything about them except for the MP3 function of them is what's a headache. It's for some reason I haven't got this down yet to where I can download the music on there and then I can play it while I'm under the water. So they're great. If you're not going to be swimming, they're great headphones. But the whole reason why I bought the fuckers was so I could swim underwater with them, and I haven't been able to get the MP3 function to work.
At least you could listen to music in the rain now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that's about it, though.
That's true. Wow.
Dude, speaking of fitness, did I tell you guys that my bench press went up 40%?
What?
Yeah, 40%. It's not that the weight went up 40%. I just changed the way I view the weights now because I read this. No. I got inspired by this new bill that they're trying to pass in North Carolina. So North Carolina lawmakers are considering a bill that would change school grades. So you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. So the new bill, the bill says that an A, if you get an A on your test, you only got to score 85% now. To get a B, 70%. A C now is 55%. A D is 40%. And an F is below 40%.
So we're lowering our standards?
Mediocre is now like a high rated grade.
Can you believe how stupid this something like this would be? They're like, you know,
this is that whole trophy, give everybody a trophy, like bullshit.
No, you know what this? You know what this is? This is just fucking tomfoolery. This is literally abracadabra. What they're trying to do is show an improvement in their education. So now, that's what they'll pass.
So it's lower our standards, so we look like we're
raising their rank. Everybody forgets about it 15 years from now.
Is that because we're getting our ass kicked all over the world? Or
no,
what?
I think it's because they just want more money and more funding. And so what'll end up happening is 15 years from now, if the bill passes. 15 years from now, they'll be like, look, we did that education funding bill, and look at our test scores. Everything increased by 15%. Everyone's be like, oh, yeah, give them more money. Look, it worked.
Yeah, it's always about money.
And people won't realize, you got to look back and be like, actually, you changed the standards, you fuckers. No wonder everybody did better.
Yeah, we didn't get smarter.
What the hell's going on today?
That's embarrassing.
That's stupid.
What the fuck are we doing?
I don't know, man. It's ridiculous. I mean, if I was a kid, I'd like it.
Yeah. Look, Dad, I got straight A's. Like, I'm not impressed.
You better believe. Because I would have got some C's, man, when I was supposed to get some F's.
Yeah.
You know that the, speaking of kids, in California, there was a bill where I'm sure it won't pass. We'll see. But where they want to allow 16 and 17-year-olds the right to vote in California.
Wow.
Yeah. How'd you guys like 16-year-olds?
They got real good ideas. You know, like I've ran into a bunch of them, but you know, at certain stores, and they really love their job.
No,
for one.
No. I know why they want to pass that. I think they want to pass that because California is run by Democrats, and Democrats appeal to the youth. Probably because some of their platform is promising a lot of free shit.
Yeah, it smells like desperation.
And and they're like, oh, we'll get an instant fucking amount of new, you know.
We could fool
like
them.
Our ideas.
We could fool them.
Yeah. Dude, I don't even like when 18-year-olds vote. You know what I'm saying? Let alone 16-year-olds.
I didn't know anything when I was 18. I mean, think about it. We're a bunch of idiots. Yeah.
Hey, this is the part of the show where we give Sal credit for being a genius on calling this, because I believe you were the first one to bring this up, and it was years ago when you talked about that the new fad would be intuitive eating. And I believe Jackie sent an article over yesterday. It was Jackie, right?
Using that term?
That term's been around for a little while.
It's been around for a long while.
Yeah,
but like popularizing it right now.
Yeah, it's well, the title of the article is it was in the Atlantic, and it says the next diet trend is not dieting, and it says underneath that intuitive eating encourages people to eat whatever they want. Now, here's the problem. I read the article. And of course, people are gonna do it wrong and not understand what
it is.
Gonna
bastardize it.
Yeah,
this is why we wrote a guide.
Yep, that's why we wrote a guide on it. The step intuitive eating is eating whatever you want, but before you get to that point, you have to learn
those levels,
how to read your body, and you have to develop a good relationship with food. Then you can start to eat intuitively, and it's a long process. It's not an easy process. So, but yeah, I knew this would be the next big thing because it's so no rules, and it's also so anti-diet, and we've now been in the diet. You know, diets have been thrown at us now, you know, at the mainstream for a while.
Yeah.
So I think people are just getting to that point now, but people aren't going to do it right because our signals are so fucked up, and we don't know when we're hungry, you know, because we eat when we're emotional or bored or craving something. You know, most people have no idea what hunger really feels like.
Mindful eating, is that a term too people use?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought so.
It'll be interesting to watch our intuitive guide sales and see if that's something that we see a trend in, that because it is starting to get more and more popular. I remember when we first wrote that, it was kind of ahead when it came into the fitness space. Like, nobody was really talking about
that.
We
kind of did the same thing with the fasting guide. Like, you know, we wrote it because it was like gaining popularity, but then fasting became like way too like mainstream.
Oh, they bastardized
misusing it.
They bastardized fasting.
Yeah.
It became a diet,
right?
You know, when it's not supposed to be a diet. Intuitive eating isn't a diet either. It's literally learning how to eat better for your body in a way where you don't feel like you're struggling and stressed out all the time. So it's like, oh,
teaching you how to connect the dots to the signals that we just weren't trained to do. Like, nobody, at least I don't remember anyone ever talking to me about, you know, teaching me as a kid, as I'm eating certain foods, to pay attention to my energy levels and my mood and my stool and my sleep and all these other markers that are affected by the fuel that we put in our body. And it's really just trying to strip everything away and then reintroduce things and teach you how to make that connection, because it's really easy to say no to something that you might be craving when you can remember that, oh, every time I do that, I shit myself and I get a headache 2 hours later and I don't sleep very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I don't feel good. Oh, every
you can
time
actually
I
trace it back
right
to like a certain food that was like a part of that process.
Or even like, so like, I've been doing this with Katrina and her pregnancy. So we just had this big salmon meal with spinach and mushroom and white rice and a big old dish of that, and she was really, really hungry, and we hadn't had this, and she's like, man, it's crazy, I can feel my body feel so much better for this. And I'm like, that's so important that you make that connection at a time right now where you have all these weird cravings and things happening. Is like, you may have these weird cravings that you think you want, like fucking cinnamon rolls with, you know, sugar puffs or some weird shit. But just remember, when you actually fuel your body with these things, of the difference in how you feel compared to when you allow yourself to do that.
What's
other shit.
Weird about those kinds of cravings is that your human body is evolved in a much different environment. We changed our environment so rapidly, and our bodies, you know, we're still evolving. But gosh, this has only really happened over the last few centuries. Before that, or you know, we lived like hunter gatherers for most part, and even through the agricultural revolution, it was far, far different than it is today. So her cravings, her body's cravings, may be telling her to seek out foods that contain vitamin C, and maybe those foods are sweet. But her understanding of modern nutrition says, what's sweet? Gummy bears or right. Starburst or whatever. When those foods didn't exist before. Before she craved something sweet, she would have connected that to a piece of fruit, for example. Right. So, and that's just this, you know, kind of a loose example, but that kind of what happens, you know, with these types of things. But,
no, absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, I had a client a while ago who, it's funny, we totally accept things that happen to our body as just something that we have. Like, I had a client once, and I was working with this guy on nutrition, and he had chronic dandruff. And when I ask him, do the questionnaire, we do the goal assessment, I try and get in detail with people because oftentimes I won't even mention certain things.
You have like a nickname, so, like Snow.
Yeah. So it finally comes up, and he's like, oh, you know, I have dandruff. He goes, but I've had it since I was a teenager. It's just part of my genetics. And I said, okay, well, let's maybe something in your diet can change it. And he's like, no, it's just, you know, my dad had it, and, you know, it runs in my family. Well, it turned out that it was dairy. We cut dairy out, and his dandruff went away. Huh. And now the guy loved dairy, loved cheese, loved, you know, all the foods that come with dairy. But the funny thing is that he didn't want to eat it anymore now because he connected it to the fact that it gave him dandruff. So he had more information.
Right.
And that's part of how you right. move through the intuitive eating process.
Agreed.
Today's Quad is brought to you by Maps Anabolic. If you're looking to maximize your overall muscle and strength, Maps Anabolic is the perfect place to start. With a full 30-day money-back guarantee, there is absolutely zero risk. So what are you waiting for? Go to mindpromedia.com and get started today.
It's the motherfucking Quad.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-qua.
First question is from Matt Beat Drum. How do I fix persistent lower back pain that always comes while deadlifting?
Oh, boy. You know, it was a long time ago. I keep forgetting how long I've been training people for. But deadlifting was considered, if you deadlifted in the gym at all,
freaked out.
It was 100% someone was going to come up to you and be like,
you're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah, young man, you shouldn't be lifting weights like that. It's going to fuck up your back.
Oh, that and good mornings. Good luck.
Oh, no. Good mornings. Today, you'll probably get people freaking out a little bit. But back then, oh, my God, if you did it, good morning.
No, you're right.
But deadlifts used to freak people out.
Yeah, deadlifts do scare people.
I remember back when I managed Hillsdale, this is when Larry was working with me. And I went out and I would, you know, I'd go out and pull, you know, four plates or whatever. And people used to... They would tell the clients would tell their trainers. I'm the general manager, and they'd tell the trainers, like, hey, your manager is going to hurt himself doing that. So,
yeah.
But now we know that if you can train with good mobility and control and stability, it's probably one of the best exercises you could do for your back. If you train responsibly with deadlifts and you can move well and you've got good control. So when I say responsibly, I mean you're not constantly pushing, you know, max PRs, because there's always a high risk with that. But if you're smart, deadlifts are part of creating what I would consider indestructible back, especially your low back. Now, if you have low back pain when you're doing deadlifts, you have a mobility issue. There's a problem there. There's a problem with your control and your stability. And your range of motion.
It needs to be addressed.
It has to be.
You have to take the time to now address that is a signal from your body saying that we need more connectivity, we need more work to be able to brace properly and to be able to create that natural belt that's supporting your spine when you're lifting heavy weights from the ground like that.
Yeah,
now this is also an opportunity too to talk about, because we get stuff like this a lot in our DMs, and I want to be able to like help that specific person out. This is the type of stuff that goes on in our forum. So somebody who has like a question like this, like, oh, my back, if I could see your movement, man, I could just I could really tell you what exactly
the problem is.
Right, because for all I know, he has an excessive arch and maybe he's sticking his ass out too much, and so he's got this shearing feeling in his low back. Mm. Or is he somebody who has no lumbar control and he's rounding at his back as he comes in? Like, or does he have some sort of a shift to the left or right?
So he's QL issue.
Yeah. So if we could see this, it really helps. And what's great is we've got Brink and Dr. Shallow and Ruscio and all these other brilliant minds inside, aside from all the other trainers too, and us, that are all helping each other out. And this is probably the most popular thing I think we see, and I think the most useful part of the form, or one of the most useful things, is the ability to, you know, video yourself deadlifting, explain what you're feeling, and then, you know, it's rare that I think one of us three or Brink or Shallow can't get to the bottom of to really help you out. So take advantage of that.
Generally speaking, though, because we have to speak generally, right? We don't know what this guy's individual issues, but generally speaking, I would say the things that help that have helped my clients the most with deadlifts are working on mobility and control of the hips, I would say, is number one. I love, you know, a real basic movement that you can work with would be like 90-90. 90-90 allows you to connect to certain parts of internal and external rotation of the hips, especially if you can get to the point where you can sit upright while you're doing some of that. The other thing is working on the TVA, the muscles that brace the core, and learning how to brace the core properly. You know, when people tend to have low back pain with deadlifts, it usually comes from having too much of an arch in the low back. You know, there's a big chunk that do round, but the reason why I would say the arch is the more common reason why people complain of low back pain is because I think people know enough now to know that if there's a rounding in the low back, that's not good.
Man, would you
get much pain in the lower back as opposed to the mid back?
I don't know if I can get on board with saying that it's most are, because I feel like I've seen an even amount of people that round, an even amount of people that probably excessively arch, and then I've seen as many, if not more, people who have a slight pronation on one foot or the other, and pronating on one side and lifting up causes this little rotation in the hips, which made, this was me like for a long time, as with good deadlifting mechanics. So my deadlifting was really good, but I still would get this kind of like pain on one side of my lower back, and it was because of my one foot was, especially when I was going heavy. If I'm going really light, a little bit easier to control, but as soon as it would be heavy at all, my femur internally rotates, my foot pronates.
And that's where your foot, basically one of your feet flattens out.
Yeah, collapses in, right? So, and very common, very, very common that this happens to people when they squat and when they deadlift and they don't even see it. This was something that I wasn't even aware of until we started hanging out with Dr. Brink a lot. And he was the one that really opened my eyes, and what a difference it was when I addressed that, because what was going on was I'm feeling it in my low back. So, of course, I'm looking at my hips and things like that. I'm not paying attention to my feet. He was the one that pointed that out. When I fixed the foot, then it stabilized the hips, and now I wasn't having any problem with my low back.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've seen a lot of that, like in what you're talking about, too, just the asymmetries as they're going to pull it up. So you see one side dominant, dominantly taking it up versus the other side sort of lagging, or, you know, but you look down at the feet and they definitely are doing different things. And so, you know, for me, I know that when I used to do more external rotation with my feet, that helped to kind of keep me, evenly distributing my force. So, you know, just changing up the stance for me on some level too helped a bit with that.
Well, I would work my way up the kinetic chain, right? I would look down first at my feet. I would pay attention and see if I'm excessively pronating in, because that could be leading to the low back issues. Then I would look at the excessive arch. Do I have an excessive arch and I feel kind of that shearing like what Sal talks about? Or am I rounding at my low back? And I would think that it's one of those three things that are probably causing it.
If you prime before you deadlift for a good 10 to 15 minutes, like do some 90-90s, maybe do some active combat movements, combat stretch. By the way, you can find these on our YouTube channel, Mind Pump TV. And then do some maybe dynamic hamstring stretching, and then go way back, way the fuck off the weight. Here's the other thing too. A lot of times people are like, oh, my back hurts when I squat. I watch them squat. Sometimes it's this easy. Cool. Cut the weight in half, go real slow, control the tempo, and take your time and get better at it before you go heavy. And then they come back to me 3 months later.
See where you lose connection.
And they're like, oh my God, it's so much better.
Yeah. It's like you find out, oh, right here, I wasn't like still bracing.
You know, it's like I just lost it.
Yeah, just back way off on the weight. Go real light. So sure, you're not going to be lifting heavy, but that's not the point right now. Go slow. Tighten your core. Make sure your form is absolutely perfect. And then practice with that light weight every time you deadlift. And then when you feel like you've mastered it with that, where you don't even have to concentrate on being perfect, add just a little bit of weight. And then slowly work your way up. And before you know it, you should be able to do a fundamental movement like deadlifting. And make no mistake, this is a bending over and picking something up off the ground is a fundamental human movement. And again, I want to emphasize, there is nothing inherently wrong with deadlifting for any part of your body, including your low back.
Next question is from G. Griff, 1965. What about time limits in the gym? I keep hearing less is more, so should you only work out for 30 to 40 minutes?
It depends.
Yeah, they came up with this number, and I almost feel like this 30 to 40 minute number was invented by gyms.
To sell training sessions.
And to sell shorter training sessions and get people out of the gym. Like here's my evidence, okay? You guys remember this. I remember managing big box health clubs, and they would get super busy, especially January and February. And we used to enforce a 20-minute time limit on cardio. Now, the reason why we had a 20-minute time limit was because if we didn't, there'd be a line. Yeah. There'd be a line for treadmills. Now, the way that they sold it to us,
we sold it with some science.
Yeah, that you're the 20 minutes is the fat burning zone. If you go past 20 minutes, you start to burn muscle. This is literally what they taught us. And this is what I'd make announcements on in the gym. Attention members and guests, if you go for longer than 20 minutes on cardio, you're probably burning muscle. So make sure you stay within the 20-minute time limit. Bullshit. It's just, it doesn't work that way.
We just want you to go.
Yeah, if let's say you're super fit, you're well-fed and hydrated, and you've got great fitness capacity and you work out for 2 hours. Is that bad? Mm. No, not at all. There's high-level athletes do that shit all the time. So it's just super individual.
Well, here's the recommendation on the 30 to 40. It looks like this to me. It's like if you've been doing nothing at all, then starting off at 30 minutes to 40 minutes in the gym, I think is an excellent idea. I mean, you haven't been working out at all. So including 3 days a week or 4 days a week at 30 to 40 minutes is a great place to start.
You can get a lot done.
Yeah, you get a lot done in 30 to 40 minutes. And this is what I probably look like when I fall off the wagon for a while and I haven't trained for a couple months. I'll come back, and when I come back, it's they're 30-minute workouts because I don't need a 60-minute get after it workout, and they're pretty easy. So I would make a 30 to 40-minute workout, if it's at the very beginning of me getting back into my routine, and then build upon that, make that a habit that it's easy for you to get there. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing wrong with you spending 60, 90. I mean, if you're somebody who's got the time and you spend 30 minutes on mobility and cooling down and a little cardio and workout, I mean, you could spend an hour and a half, 2 hours in there. Yeah. But
why not 7-minute abs? You know
what I mean? Yeah. I do think you should work up to whatever is what's realistic for you to maintain, right? If you're not somebody who can commit to 60 to 90 minutes in the gym 5 days a week, that's an awful place to start. So I always recommend 3 days a week, 30 to 40 minutes, get you started there, and then we work up to that. Like if that's
this was also based off of some science in the past that would show that, growth hormone and testosterone start to drop, cortisol starts to go up if it's too long. But a lot of that's based on intensity, because I'm going to tell you something right now. If I train really fucking hard, I can do a workout in 15 minutes. If I could take somebody through a 15-minute hardcore workout of HIIT style training, and they're going to be done. Then you can have an hour and a half workout where you're doing far less intensity, but you're stretching the time out. You're doing straight sets. You might be doing mobility. So this number 30 to 40 is an industry number that they came up with, and it's super general, and I think it's to sell programs. That's really
it completely depends on your exercise knowledge and level coming in. So if you're a beginner, like I was talking about, probably don't need to spend all day there. You could probably be super efficient with just a few exercises that you're trying to build up volume with. And so, but for somebody else that's a competitor or trying to do things in a accomplish and has a high volume set already, you're gonna have to spend a lot of time in there.
My peak, when I was at my peak fitness in terms of just working out, I would do close to 2 hours. It would be about an hour. I would hit weights and I was training pretty intensely, and I'd be lifting for about an hour and 20 minutes, and then I would do a 40-minute walk outdoor. I used to do this when I used to own my studio, And so I was working out 2 hours a day, you know, at least 4 or 5 days a week. And then the other days I was doing 45 minutes to 60 minutes because they were much shorter. And this is when I was in my peak fitness, and I was recovering great and feeling absolutely
phenomenal. I'm all for efficiency, though, you know, and I like the mentality of trying not to, like, just waste my time and just aimlessly go around. And, you know, some people, you can get in caught up in that where you're just kind of taking your time, like, you know, you're just sort of, like, going through the motions with it, but be intentional with it. But it really, it's not like that's a limitation, like 30, 40 minutes, like on the dot, I'm done.
You know? Have you guys ever worked out with like pretty advanced power lifters? You ever seen how long they take?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, forever.
Fucking hours.
Yeah.
No. Hours. Well,
the rest periods themselves.
Yeah. They're crazy. 3 to 5 minutes between each set.
Oh, yeah. They'll hit a set and then they'll be sitting down hanging out for 3 to 5 minutes in between. And they're doing a lot of sets of different things. So they're there for like 2.5 hours. You throw in the time it takes them to wrap their knees and do all that shit. That's a half a day right there, you know? Who was it? What's his name that we went to go visit in Texas? I always forget his
Ben?
Name.
Pollock.
Pollock. So didn't he say how some of his workouts take so long because of the way he trains and all that stuff?
Oh, I don't remember what he said.
I'm sure, though.
I'm sure it's an all-day event.
Yeah. I know Olympic lifters at high levels will train for hours several times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll come into their gym, and they'll be 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon.
I love to spend hours in the gym. There's times when I was competing where I probably peaked at 3 hours in the gym at some times. But one, I worked all the way up to that volume, right? And two, I never fooled myself to think that I would be able to maintain that volume, right? This is for leading up to a show and shit. So when I'm talking to the average client who just wants to be fit and healthy and maintain, like that, to me, that trumps all the studies and everything. It's like where we need to start is less than what you know you can commit to, or at the most what you can commit to. Like, because the biggest mistake that
realistically,
the biggest mistake that people make is over committing to something that they can't do for their whole life. Like, if you can't work out for 90 minutes in the gym 5 days a week for your whole life, you shouldn't start there. That's not a good place to start, because you're already setting yourself up for eventually scaling off of that, and then you won't be able to maintain what you've done by building that up. So
plus, people don't typically scale down. They typically stop.
Right.
You know, when people first start working
out. Yeah, they burn out.
Then they're like, oh, that's it. I'm going an hour a day, 5 days a week, and then it just doesn't work with their schedule.
Everybody is so all or nothing.
Yeah.
It's like you're either completely off the wagon, you eat like shit, you don't do it, you don't do anything good for your body, or you're joining the, you know, F45 class, Orange Theory, fucking high intensity, 5-6 days a week, and you're eating hella good. And it's like it's one or the other. It's like, man, pump your brakes. Like, you weren't doing shit just like 2 weeks ago. 30-minute workouts, really good.
You can actually, for the average person, you can build a decent amount of muscle and strength. You're not going to be a competitive anything, but you can do really well with a 30 to 40 minute workout 3 days a week.
Dude, 30 minutes well planned and organized.
Yeah.
I mean, you could absolutely get in. You could get after it. You get 3 or 4 of the big lifts in at that amount of time, man, and at least 2 to 3 sets of that. And that's your body will be looking real good and feeling real good if you just concentrate on that.
Next question is from Huggins R. How do you pass the awkwardness during rest times when training quiet clients?
You know, nobody talks about this in personal training.
There's some clients like that, though.
No, but this is a big one, because I think when you first become a trainer, you think, oh, I'm just going to be working out with them and telling them what to do. But a lot of your training is going to be sitting there resting. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It used to be like
50% of it is.
Yeah. You'd see some trainers would have like the Starbucks cup, and they just kind of, you know, looking off in the distance and drinking. Now it's like they're on their phone in between. You know, like that's like a horrible. I'm bringing up bad examples first.
What you do as a trainer in between the sets is as important as what you do during the sets if you want to keep clients for a long time.
Everybody watches you.
If you're a trainer that doesn't say shit and you look around, your client just sitting there twiddling their thumbs in between sets, and you only help them when they're doing their sets, they're not going to want to stay with you for a long time.
No,
it's boring.
No, you're boring.
Yeah.
So it's your fault.
There is something that I would do different that I wouldn't have done when I was a trainer, because this technology didn't exist at the what we're capable of doing now. And it is kind of counterintuitive, because first thing I would tell you is coffee and phones on the floor is an absolute no-no. In fact, I used to make my trainers put all the phones in my drawer as soon as they got to work. But I also could see a lot of value in, if I was with a client who doesn't talk very much, or I can't educate, we're not having good dialogue back and forth about nutrition, working out, I could see lots of value of actually recording their sets and then actually showing them their sets and actually showing them the breakdown that they have in their form. Because there's always things to critique in almost every any client that you train. It's rare that you're ever going to have a client that doesn't have things they can be working on. And so you could video them with your phone and then between sets be like, here, check this out. Look, you're doing really good the way you're sitting back on your heels, but notice your knees still kind of collapse in a little bit right here. So really concentrate on keeping those.
I actually found that helpful and did that a few times with like deadlifts, for instance. Like I had this bar path app where I would like film and it would show where, you know, the bar moved away from their body and like how like great their bar path was in terms of like the lift. So there's just little cues in there that you kind of capture and they can see visually.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Maybe I can change and adjust my body accordingly.
And that looks a lot different than the trainer who's fucking texting on his phone or surfing Instagram. It's like your client's leaning over your shoulder and together you guys are looking at, you know, him or her form and saying, hey, this is, you're doing this really good right here, or, you know, try and get your head back a little bit like this. And you can kind of, I mean, this is the stuff that I would do now. I didn't do this because that technology didn't exist when I was on the floor with clients, but I could see value in that, especially in a client that is quiet and not really engaging with me a lot. This would be a tool that I would probably use. Most clients, though, I was constantly like, I was always setting the table for what was coming, which always transitions
painting in the picture.
Yeah, which always transitions into sales. Like that was the real reason why I did it originally, to be completely honest, is the selling part. Like later on, I got really good at like laying out their program and planning and shit like that. But I learned early on that if I was always talking about the future things that I'm going to be doing with them and what we're working on currently right now and your progress and what's coming next, it made it very easy when it came time to renew their contract that I had already been saying shit for the last 3-4 weeks about all the stuff that we're going to be working on and what we're going to be doing, that it's kind of like this assumption close that, oh, you know, I know you only have one session left, but, you know, we still got to get to X, Y, and Z that I told you about last week that I want to work on. So
I would always use it as a platform then to just discuss like something new that I learned, you know, like something I that's why I was always trying to challenge myself to go learn new things, new techniques, new modalities, new things about nutrition. And I would just use myself as an example if they weren't giving me a lot of their own personal anecdote, right? Because there are clients that you were like, well, what'd you have for breakfast? What'd you have? And they just give you like a one-word answer, and then that's the end of it.
That's one of the best ways to learn yourself as a trainer. So I think that's great advice. I would do the same thing. I would learn something new the night before, whether it be reading some study or article or some new book, and regurgitating that to every client because they don't know. You get the same conversation to all of them, like, hey, did you know this? You know, like, and it's just whether it be just new emerging science right now or something that you just learned, and sharing that, like, and getting in the habit of doing that, you cement that into your own brain, and now it's something that like stays with me forever. So it's a great way to practice growing and learning yourself is, you know, as you learn as a trainer, the next day I'm regurgitating a lot of the information that I just learned the day before to all my clients that I see that day.
Yeah. If you're planning on being a trainer as your career and you want to have clients that stay with you for a long time, you want to build those relationships where you're training people for 3, 4, 5, 10 years. You know, I had clients that were with me for over 12 years consistently.
Yeah.
You need to work on your conversation skills just like anything else. Because what ends up happening initially, this is what the timeline looks like. You start training your clients initially, and most of the conversations in between sets revolve around fitness and health. Mm-hmm. You're educating them. You're asking them questions. You're helping them with form. You're talking about their technique. But after about, I don't know, a year, maybe even less, 6 months or so,
starts to get personal.
Now you're talking about your kids, their family, what happened on the news, what's going on. And that, believe it or not, is why clients keep showing up to see you after years of training them. This is a fact. Now, you got to be a good trainer first to be a successful trainer. That's a given. But the other part that a lot of trainers don't realize is you got to also have those conversation skills and be an interesting person, because this person is going to pay you to see you for 2 hours every single week, 3 hours of dedicated time with you, half of that time being where they're not working out, where you guys are just be conversing. They're probably going to spend more time talking to you than they do most people in their family. So you got to kind of build and develop those skills. And as I got better later on as a trainer, as I started, you know, getting to the point where I could be picky with my clients, many times that was what got me to pick a client was, is this person going to be interesting? Because I like to learn from training just like clients like to learn. Right. So if I had my pick and I had two clients and one was, you know, a brain surgeon, and the other one was just, you know, some guy that wants to, you know, work out and lose 30 pounds or whatever. And I meet with them and I talk with them. I might want to work with the brain surgeon because, whoa, he's got some interesting stuff and I'll be talking to this guy or whatever. That was later on, of course, but you got to work on your conversational skills as a trainer. I swear to God, it's the missing component that a lot of trainers don't realize will make you successful.
The fact of the matter, and it's unfortunate, but it's the truth. I mean, and this is just the experience of having so many trainers working with me for so many years, is that the clients, like 80, maybe 90% of them, train with the trainer that they like the most. Nothing to do with their education level. Yep. Nothing. I mean, I sometimes would have some of the most popular trainers were the least smartest one on the totem pole. So
but they were the most likable.
Yeah. People loved them. They interacted with them. They had a great time. The experience for them trumped their level of knowledge. And so that is such
I used to teach that to trainers, and some trainers get pissed off. Oh, well, they don't have as much skill as I do. And I'm like, yeah, but they stopped working out because of you. So, yeah, this trainer over here might not be as good as you, but guess what? Mrs. Johnson's been coming for 2 or 3 days a week for the last 5 years and has not missed a workout. Mm-hmm. So he's actually more effective than you are.
She loves to see her trainer.
That's it.
I don't know. You can't stress that point. This is something, too, that in our space, I think we get into this peacocking thing where it's, you know, I have more certs, my degree's higher, I've got more experience, whatever. And it's like, listen, you could have a guy or girl who's fucking brand new, doesn't have hardly any certifications, and can destroy those people. And this is for all you trainers that are brand new. Like, this is for sure, like, how you come in and you become that trainer who the clients love to see you because you make them laugh, you make them smile, you make their day better. A lot of people that buy personal training, a lot of them are buying it for that part of it too. Like, they have goals. That's like the kicker. It's like, hey, I need to get in shape, but I
want to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want to enjoy the process.
Could you imagine? Think about it this way. The main reason why most people don't work out all the time is they fucking hate it. They don't enjoy the process. Imagine if you could make them enjoy the process.
Right.
You are a successful trainer. Congratulations.
Right.
Next question is from the real Josh Gill. How do you deal with the negative effects of increased self-awareness? The more I've cleaned up my diet and become more aware of how different foods, activity levels, amount of sleep, etc. affect me, it seems like I notice more of the negative effects rather than the positive, which creates more stress. Any tips for handling the stress and anxiety that comes with being more in tune with your body?
This is a cool question.
It is, because this is what happens. This is exactly what happens. So, you know, we've talked about this before, but there's 4 stages of learning with any process. Anytime you learn something new, you go through these 4 stages of learning. And the first stage is before you realize that you don't know something. That's the unconscious incompetence stage. This means that you're incompetent, but you're unconscious of your incompetence. So you had no idea. This is how a lot of people operate with food, for example. They just have no idea that they don't know. They don't know what they're doing to the body. They don't know how it's affecting them. They're completely disconnected. So they're unconsciously incompetent. The next stage and the stage after are where you can develop anxiety and stress, and that's when you become consciously incompetent. So that's the next one. So now all of a sudden, holy fuck, I don't know a lot. So now I'm aware of my incompetence. And then you have to become consciously competent, where you have to always think about what you're doing, track my food, pay attention to how I feel. Oh, this makes me feel this way. This makes me feel that way. That's the stressful period. But don't fret, because the next stage is
unconscious competence,
where you're unconsciously competent. So to give you an example, walking and breathing are unconscious competence. Like, you don't walk around and think to yourself, take one step, take another step, take another step, or breathe, breathe, breathe. Or like right now, I'll make everybody feel weird right now. If I say to you that you're
Involuntary muscles.
Yeah, if I say to you right now that now you are blinking consciously, okay, for the next 5 minutes now, you're going to think about every time you blink, and it's going to suck, and I'm breaking your balls. But that's kind of what happens when you become more self-aware. So you will go through that phase. But one thing you should realize is, rather than noticing the negative effects of the things that you're connecting to, try to focus more on the positives.
Right.
That will help the process. Otherwise, it can be very stressful, for sure.
I think that's it. That's all needs to be said, is simply what you just ended with, which is focusing on the things that, instead of you looking at all the things that are negative and bad. For example, like I've openly shared on the show that, you know, I'll have things like Diet Coke or a Rockstar or shit like that. It's like, I'm aware that it's not serving my body and it's not ideal. But I also don't beat myself up over it. At least now I'm aware of that. If I 20 years ago as a kid when I was drinking them, I thought they were good for me. I thought they were energy drinks and they were in the health area. So I assume they're good for me and they gave me lots of energy. I love them. And so if I fed into that addiction to them, where now it's like, okay, I know it's not ideal for my body. I know that it's not good, but I'm also not going to freak out every time that I have those moments when I didn't get a better alternative. And so I think that's just it. You got to stop looking at it as such a negative and look at the positives when you make the right choices, when you decide like, oh, normally I would have just drove through and got a Togo sandwich because I used to think sandwiches were really healthy, but they're really not the ideal thing for me because I get all these reactions for every time I have white bread or whatever. Okay, well, instead you go eat somewhere else and you start to notice like, oh, when I make this choice for food,
feels great.
I feel great and I feel better instead of beating yourself up for the thing whenever you do have a setback and you make the choice to go to Togo's. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It is tough because when you get all this biofeedback and like all these new devices that like expose patterns that like you're prone to, it is alarming at first, and it is something that like can draw your attention towards it, and it's hard to sort of separate yourself from that. But I think then it's reps, it's repetitions, it's going through the process now of like, okay, if there's a better way, a better process, I'm just gonna, you know, try and focus on just, okay, today is the reps. Today I'm doing it this way. And you just kind of keep going until it becomes part of the ritual where it's unconscious.
To that point, Justin, and I think this is good advice also, is maybe part of why you feel this way too is you're overwhelmed because now you're aware of so many bad things that you were doing.
Yeah, distill it down to a few things.
Yeah. So you just made me think of that, right? So when I get back on like my kick or I'm really dialing things in, I pick one or two major offenders. That's it. Like, I'm not getting good sleep at all. I've been drinking Diet Coke every day. Okay. Two things I'm going to just worry about right now is I'm going to eliminate the Diet Coke. I'm going to make an effort to turn my phone off 2 hours before that. Sure, I have other aspects of my life I'm fucking up and aren't ideal, but I'm not going to worry about those. I'm going to take the biggest offenders or the biggest offender and try and make good habits around that, and then I'll move on to the next one versus allowing yourself to get overwhelmed by all the things that you're fucking up.
Yeah, you know what this reminds me of? It's like what happened when all of a sudden we were able to get news of from across the country so quickly, and we became aware of every time, you know, a kid got kidnapped. It's such a rare event, right? But you would get this news that a kid got kidnapped in Michigan. Uh-oh, one got kidnapped in Florida. One got murdered over here. And now you're hyper aware of what's happening. And so now you're all of a sudden you're very fearful. Now the way to get out of that isn't to go back to ignorance, but to realize the context. Oh, it's actually quite rare. Let's look at the real statistics. That's happening way out there. And unplugging from some of the stuff that makes you feel super negative. That's kind of what you were talking about, Adam. Yeah. You're focusing on two things and forgetting everything else for a second and just focus on those two that you can control. That's a great strategy because, man, you start tackling, oh my God, if I sit there and think about the plastics and the chemical exposures and pollution and the light, you know, the quality of the light.
My
and
propensity
the
towards genetic diseases or all that kind of stuff. I've just found out, you know, like, oh my God, my brain will go crazy.
No, and you end up making your health worse as a result. So.
Due to stress, right?
That's right. So look, if you go to mindpumpfree.com, you can download some of our free guides. We have quite a few on there. Some of them teach you how to squat more weight. Others, how to build your arms or flatten your midsection. We even have guides for personal trainers. Again, it's mindpumpfree.com. Also, if you want to find us on our own individual social media pages, you can find us on Instagram. Justin can be found at mindpumpjustin. You can find my page at Mind Pump Sal, and Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.